This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a Thursday. We're going to talk about January 6th here really quickly from the Cash Patel confirmation hearing today, because there's something about that that it's kind of all in the back of our minds. So we're going to have a very forward discussion about it. I should let you know, I kind of called an audible. I texted Amber Smith and asked her to come on. Amber Smith's going to join us about a half hour from now. She's a helicopter pilot, Army, Air Cav. Well, she was. She now talks about that. She wrote books, things like that. She's been out there. She's been on the show before, but I'm getting a lot of technical questions from people. I don't understand how this tragedy could happen. How could they not see? How could they? So let's just talk to someone about it. About a half hour from now. She's been in that helicopter, operated that helicopter. Let's talk to her. What's the deal? How could this happen? Maybe she has a great explanation. Maybe she has no explanation at all. But about a half hour from now, we'll talk about that. But I wanted to come back to this. As we know, I laid it out in the first hour. It's a conversation we've had many times before on the show, that our institutions have been taken over on purpose by the communists. And the purpose is so they can use the force of government, so they can use state power against their political enemies. That was always the goal. Use the institutions themselves for the revolution. Use the institutions to reward your friends and attack your enemies. And that, of course, brings us to January 6th. And yes, January 6th political prisoners, most of them are out free, still waiting on Jeremy Brown to be made whole, but most of them are out free. Good, good, it's all good. But let's set that aside, and let's talk about January 6th, because there are a couple things out there, a couple bits of information out there people really need to know. One, why haven't they been able to locate the pipe bomber? Thomas Massie, congressman who doesn't exactly get a lot wrong, came out and he said he thinks the pipe bomber's a police officer in the Capitol. Okay? We'll set that aside, though. Let's talk about January 6th, that day. Donald Trump has famously said, hey, I asked for National Guard troops. Nancy Pelosi was given the request for National Guard troops. Listen to what Cash Patel says. This is from his confirmation hearing today, because it brings up an interesting question when you focus on the other facts around January 6th. Listen to what Cash Patel says, and as you listen, think about this. Did the federal government, did Democrats in coordination with, I don't know, take your pick, FBI, CIA, NSA, I don't know. Did Democrats cause January 6th on purpose? Did they do it on purpose so they could send the FBI after their political opponents? It's a very fair question to ask, especially when I hear things like this from Cash Patel.
And while you were chief of staff at DOD, how many times did DOD approach Capitol Police and ask if they needed National Guard assistance?
I believe those letters are well documented, numerous instances, and in numerous of those instances, those requests were shut down.
Okay, but I'm going to stop there. I'll let him keep going. He goes on for 50 seconds, but I just want to explain something. So he's at DOD. He keeps going and saying, hey, you need National Guard? You guys need National Guard? Well, our intelligence agencies, our federal law enforcement agencies, sadly, they monitor everything now, including social media chatter and traffic. And the reason I bring this up is the number of people who were going to be in Washington, D.C., in and around the Capitol, was in no way a mystery to anyone in the government. On January 6th, they knew people were coming. They knew how many people were coming. They knew because they are on every single chat channel you can possibly use online. They've infiltrated every single, quote, patriot group out there. They are in all of this, and they're in it for the express purpose of gathering intelligence on you. So think about that. As you think about what Kash Patel just said, the federal government knew that a bunch of people angry about the election were coming to Washington, D.C. They knew how many of them there were. Kash Patel at the Department of Defense goes to them and says, hey, we've got a bunch of National Guard troops. Do you want them? And they repeatedly said, nah, we're good. Huh. Interesting.
Now, am I correct that the Capitol Sergeant at Arms said assistance was unnecessary?
That's correct, Senator.
Who did the Sergeant at Arms report to?
The Speaker of the House.
That would have been Nancy Pelosi at the time. Is that correct?
Yes, Senator.
And would that also be Chuck Schumer, then the Senate Majority Leader?
The Sergeant at Arms, yes, Senator, reports up there.
Did Mayor Bowser, the Democrat elected mayor in D.C., either request or allow National Guard assistance?
She put in writing on the days leading up to January 6th, a declination for National Guard additional support. And that letter is available publicly to the world.
So, and just to speak English for folks at home, a declination meant she said, no, don't send National Guard. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So I know it sounds like a simple task and a simple point, but let's just say, hypothetically, let's walk through a couple scenarios. You're Nancy Pelosi, you're Chuck Schumer, you're Mayor Bowser of Washington, D.C. You know how many people are coming, because they did. You know what they're angry about, they did. And let's say you want to stop any kind of a protest or riot from getting out of control. Do you accept National Guard? Well, of course you do. You know the number of police officers you have available to you to control a crowd of such size. It's a no-brainer to accept it. In fact, isn't that the safe option? Tell me, who is going to get in even the slightest bit of trouble if you accept National Guard protection and then don't really need them? Is anyone going to say, ah, this is an outrage? You brought in the National Guard and everything was peaceful. You would not hear that at all. In fact, bringing in the National Guard is the no risk option. No risk, all reward. There is no downside to it. And yet, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Mayor Bowser, all said, nah, we're good. Okay. So that was scenario number one, if you were trying to prevent a riot. Now let's go to scenario number two. Because we really we need to know this information. This isn't old news. This matters a lot. Did the federal government purposely cause a spicy protest in order to justify sending its guns after you? If you wanted a bad riot to start and you wanted it to get out of control because you want to be able to send the FBI after people, well, then it would make all the sense in the world that you would refuse National Guard. Especially when you also consider, we know now for a fact, the Federal Bureau of Investigation had people out of uniform all over that crowd. We don't know to what extent they were involved. We don't know because the FBI won't tell us. Were they ringleaders? Were they inside of the Capitol building? Were they the ones instigating everything? We don't know. We do know things like, I don't know, gentleman by the name of Ray Epps, he's on camera telling people we're going down to the Capitol and we're going to go in the Capitol. And then magically, right after that riot, the FBI stopped looking for Ray Epps. In fact, the New York Times did a multi-page puff piece on poor Ray Epps. So just looking at this completely objectively, because I don't know that we'll ever know. Hopefully Cash tells us. If I believe that the federal government caused January 6th on purpose because they wanted to send the Cheka after Republicans, I have evidence point after evidence point after evidence point after evidence point that leads me to that conclusion. If I believe the federal government had no idea at all it was coming or didn't want it to happen, well, you don't have very much to defend that. And that's kind of important, isn't it? Because the FBI is still there and all those people are still there. Did they do a Reichstag fire on us? Was that done in our country? Very fair question to ask. We'll talk just a little bit more about that because I want to move on to other things, social media stuff and whatnot. We still have to get to Tulsi before I get to that. Maybe you are curious about history. I like to talk about it all the time. History of everything. American, world history. Maybe you're a Constitution buff. Maybe you are interested in the ancient Christian church. Maybe the Roman Republic fascinates you, its rise and fall. And let's be honest, just about every red-blooded American is fascinated by the rise and fall of the Roman Republic. Do any of these subjects interest you? Would you like to get an elite education at no cost in these things? That's what Hillsdale's doing for everybody right now. Hillsdale College, that elite university, elite college. They're offering over free 40 online courses. You, no matter who you are, no matter your age, you can go get smarter free. Hillsdale.edu/Jesse is where you go to enroll. Go hoover up as much of that knowledge as you can. Hillsdale.edu/Jesse. We'll be back.
Jesse Kelly. Back soon.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, reminding you that tomorrow's an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday, and you need to get your questions emailed in now to jesse@jessekellyshow.com. And Jewish producer Chris is requesting that I elaborate just a little bit on Reichstag fire before I continue on with this Cash Patel January 6th stuff. Okay, so just really, really quickly, this is going to be like the 1 or 2 minute version of the Reichstag fire. Kind of one of those things you kind of assume everyone knows, but they don't know about. Germany. Hitler took over. Hitler was elected, took over. And Germany had a, we're going to call it a Congress, right? For lack of a better way to put it, just to explain it. Germany had a Congress. Now, when Hitler took over, remember, Germany was in a state of upheaval post-World War I that was disastrous. And there were various, all kinds of left-wing groups trying for power in Germany. And left-wing groups being the Nazis were one of them. That's a left-wing group, not a right-wing group. Nazi, National Socialists, and full-blown communists. They were in the streets as well, brawling with the Nazis, fighting for power. Hitler, after years of political maneuvering and whatnot, gets himself elected. But he still doesn't have complete power, unchecked power, to do everything he wants to do to his domestic political enemies. And so Hitler gets given a gift, if you will. If you're Hitler and you want to use state power against your domestic political enemies, well, what's something that would really justify going after them? How about setting their Capitol building on fire? The Reichstag, their Capitol building, goes up in flames one night. Now, who did it? We'll never, ever, 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 ever know. I mean, I realize they arrested the guy and whatnot, but immediately Hitler and the Nazis said, look, it's the communists. I told you, the communists, this is clearly a domestic enemy. And clearly, in order to save Germany, we must use state power against our domestic political opponents. And communists got rounded up and shot. Period. and a story. And it was all justified because somebody, a boogeyman, set fire to the Reichstag. I believe January 6th was our Reichstag fire. I believe Democrats, I believe the system did it on purpose to justify what they always wanted to do to you, and that's send the FBI after you for being a Republican. That's what I believe. It's why they cling to it so hard to this day. Did you hear Dick Durbin asking Cash Patel about it today?
So do you think that America is safer because the 1,600 people have been given an opportunity to come out of serving their sentences and live in our communities again?
Senator, I have not looked at all 1,600 individual cases. I have always advocated for imprisoning those that cause harm to our law enforcement and civilian communities. I also believe America is not safer because President Biden's commutation of a man who murdered two FBI agents, Agent Kohler's and Williams' family, deserve better than to have the man that point blank range fired a shotgun into their heads and murdered them released from prison. So it goes both ways.
Pretty good answer there by Cash, but you notice Dick Durbin wasn't interested in any of that. It was just January 6th. They can't let it go. It's almost as if they wanted January 6th to happen, and they need the American people to continue to buy the lie about what happened. Almost, anyway. Klobuchar embarrassed herself today, like always.
Before I call on Senator Lee,
could he just answer the question if he said that the FBI headquarters, where they investigate cybercrime and terrorism,
Ms. Chair,
be shut down and opened as a deep state?
Hey, Ms. Chair.
As a museum. Did he say that the headquarters should be shut down?
Mr. Chair.
I deserve an answer to that question. He is asking to be head of the FBI, and he said that their headquarters should be shut down.
Mr. Chair, parliamentary inquiry.
You got anything you want to say, Mr. Patel, before I go on to Senator Lee?
Simply this. If the best attacks on me are going to be false accusations and grotesque mischaracterizations, the only thing this body is doing is defeating the credibility of the men and women at the FBI. I stood with them here in this country. In every theater of war we have, I was on the ground in service of this nation. And any accusations leveled against me that I would somehow put political bias before the Constitution are grotesquely unfair. And I will have you reminded that I have been endorsed by over 300,000 law enforcement officers to become the next director of the FBI. Let's ask them.
You know what hit me when I sat and watched Klobuchar in that line of questioning? She looks terrible. She just looks exhausted, malnourished, if you will. She needs to start off her day with a superfood smoothie that she blends in the obliterator. That's what occurred to me. I'm looking at Amy Klobuchar and I'm thinking to myself, Sheffman needs to get a hold of her and help. And I bet you they'll help at Sheffman. They're great people. But they came up with the greatest blender ever. It's called the Obliterator. And you see, Ob makes these disgusting, disgusting smoothies in the morning full of nutrition. Ugh, it's gross. All kinds of vegetables and stuff. And the only way I get that thing down is with the Obliterator. There's no guesswork with the Obliterator. It has auto-sense technology. Just throw in the ingredients, turn it on. It's one Red Dot Best Concept Design Awards, so you can leave it on your counter. But most importantly, it blends up all that disgusting filth perfectly so I can drink it. And that's what Amy Klobuchar needs. And she can go to Sheffman.com to get it. C-H-E-F-M-A-N, Amy. All right? And another thing that occurred to me is Amy Klobuchar is never going to get to run for president. Remember, that was her thing. She thought she was going to have a real shot to be Joe Biden's VP. And then the Democrat Party decided to go full-blown DEI, and Joe Biden stands up and does, well, I mean, he probably didn't even do it. Someone wrote it for him. He stands up and says, I got to pick a VP, and it's going to be a woman. And right then, Amy Klobuchar is like, yeah, I'm in. And then he's like, and she'll be black. And then Amy Klobuchar is like, oh, no, dang it. I'm so tired. That sucks for Amy. Anyway, Cash definitely had his life threatened a lot by filthy street animals.
Fortunately, Senator, yes. I don't want to get into those details with my family here.
Let's get into a few of them. Tell me about it.
Well, if you look at the record from January 6th, where I testified before that committee, because of my personal information being released by Congress, I was subjected to a direct and significant threat on my life. And I put that information in the record. I had to move. In that threat, I was called.
Street animals. All right. Amber Smith, the helicopter pilot, joins us next.
Feeling a little stocky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly DC.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty on Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
But you do want to be informed.
Can you be informed without being all of those other things? We think so. Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty, the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
If you shoot at us and we deflect it, it doesn't really count. And that just doesn't make any sense. You got to make a rule. Don't shoot at the United States.
Or if you prefer, Iran, blah, blah, blah.
America haters are winning. The would-be communists, the Marxists, are winning in America. And they're doing so openly, and nobody cares.
I think giving the downtrodden money enables them. They aren't getting the money. I'm winning.
Good Lord, that was the voice of the patriarchy right there, folks. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Thursday, and it obviously this is a heavy subject. We touched on it real quick right off the top, just praying for all those families. People have lost it all right now, and I thought it would be appropriate to have Amber Smith on the show. She's joined us before. She's a wonderful author, wrote a great book, Unfit to Fight. She also is somebody I wanted to lean on right now because she was a helicopter pilot, Iraq, Afghanistan. She knows what she's talking about. And for a lot of people, they're confused. They want to know, how can this happen? How can something like this happen? So, Amber, you're the smart, qualified person. I'm the stupid guy on the ground who doesn't understand. Tell me what it's like to operate a helicopter.
It's extremely stressful and challenging, and that comes when all of the external circumstances are good. That's on a clear blue 22, you know, blue sky, no wind day, when you have you're talking on five different radios, you're talking about bird hazards, telephone poles, just flying the aircraft and making sure all operating systems and mechanical systems are operating correctly. That's on a good day. Then you add in bad weather, low visibility, night flight, night vision goggles, and it just adds those stressors. And then, as we saw in the instance with this crash, a very heavy traffic environment. And I'm talking about probably one of the worst in the country when it comes to blended fixed-wing commercial airliners and the helicopter traffic. It is extremely intense and stressful. And it's, you know, we're starting to hear more about what's been going on, but I think they are going to have to make some changes the way the two different types of aircraft operate around each other in that specific area.
Okay, so let's focus on a couple things here. You mentioned night vision goggles. Most people are not familiar with why that would be a problem at all. Don't you just put them on and you can see everything at night? Why is that an issue?
Well, it's because it's unnatural sight. And so you're flying an aircraft. When you fly an aircraft, first of all, it has so much to do with feeling. You are physically holding three flight controls, one in your right hand, one in your left, and then you have your pedals on the floor. And so much of it has to do with feeling. So when it comes to operating aircraft that relies so much on physical feeling and physical control, the way your brain and your vision is oriented it has effects on the way you fly the helicopter. So when you're flying with night vision goggles, first of all, it is a sea of green. It's different shades of green. And light affects night vision goggles too. So some light is nice and necessary and helpful when you're flying at light, but there's a balance. If there is too much light out there, and we're talking about from all the different aircraft, you're in a metropolitan area in Washington, D.C. with so much light, so it is lit up underneath you, and it can actually blind out your goggles a little bit, making it hard to see. And you're also looking through, essentially, probably the best way to describe it would be like looking through a straw, in terms of how, or like horse blinders. Like, you do have those limitations when it comes to night vision goggles. And so it's not like you're just suddenly have this, you know, night vision, like it's the exact same as your natural day vision. It is extremely visually limiting. You learn how to do it, and it does allow you to do your job in night operations, but it increases your risk. It is much more dangerous, and it is very hard.
Speaking with Amber Smith, former helicopter pilot. Okay, Amber, can you explain to all of us, why is there a crew at all? Can't just one person operate this?
No. Physically, can someone pick up an aircraft and fly it to the next place? Yes. In order to do it safely and successfully, you need a crew to be able to cover, and a Black Hawk's pretty big. So you have crew chiefs in the back that are clearing the aircraft, places that pilots can't see. And the more eyes you have in the aircraft, helping clear traffic, helping clear obstacles, the better of a crew you're going to be and the safer you're going to be. And as we know, a Black Hawk is a passenger aircraft, so it's carrying people around. I think a big thing to point out here is that there was likely some serious miscommunication between Tower and the crew, just like that you talked about. Inside the cockpit, you have something, and this is what the Army trains you on, not only just in flight school, but when you get to your units, there's constant retraining on crew coordination. It is, you know, pilot error, human error is the biggest cause of aviation accidents, and things can get very dangerous when crews aren't communicating properly together. We don't know what happened in this situation. There's no like voice recorder box in a Black Hawk the way there is in commercial airliners. So we'll likely never know what was going on between the two pilots and the crew chief. But it sounds like the crew called out a visual on the aircraft, but it ended up being the wrong aircraft. And so I personally think that, they thought they had the aircraft inside that Tower was calling and asking them if they saw. So I just don't think that they even saw the aircraft that they ended up flying into.
Gosh, it's so freaking sad. Okay, Amber, help me understand why we're doing night training in this area at all. You know, a lot of people who don't understand, they look and they think, well, that's such an incredible risk and an unnecessary risk. Why is this kind of training done here and not, you know, in the plains of Nebraska? Why?
Well, there's a mission. There's national missions that are, you know, required up in that part of, in the capital, in the nation's capital. So there are aircraft at Belvoir, Fort Belvoir, just south of Washington, D.C. in Virginia, that are tasked with this mission. And so you train where you fight. That's their mission. They're going to go fly on these corridors that they may have to fly in if they're ever, you know, like activated to do some of these missions. So the mission itself, to me, is not a problem. What is a problem is I think that some of the policies that are in place, likely with the FAA, like, I'm very curious to see when the ceiling for helicopter traffic on those routes down the Potomac were last updated, because I just found out that the ceiling for those helicopter routes on the Potomac is 200 feet. So ceiling, that means you are not allowed to fly above. Just for some context, Jesse, when I was flying in Afghanistan, my hard deck under night vision goggles in Afghanistan with enemy activity was 300 feet. Okay, hard deck means you can't fly below, ceiling can't fly above. So I was not allowed to fly below 300 feet under goggles at night because our commanders didn't want us smacking into things. And so in one of the busiest air traffic areas in our country, when it comes to helicopters and civilian aviation, the helicopters are flying at 200 feet and below. I am shocked that there has not been a helicopter incident before, not necessarily with a commercial airliner, but just with helicopter traffic in general. So if there's anything that comes out of all of this, they need to recheck that policy. I'm assuming that policy was put in place prior to it being as busy as it is today. But as we all know with bureaucracy, once a policy gets in place, they don't care to ever change it or update it as technology advances or traffic advances. And then another thing that I want to point out to your listeners is that a lot of people are talking about, well, the helicopter was above, you know, that 200 feet separation that they're supposed to have, which plays into the issue even more. So if a helicopter was flying at 200 feet, and if when they crashed into the airliner at like 350, something like that, 150 feet altitude increase in a helicopter can happen in a split second. It's a bump. It's a slight tap on a collective. It is a small wind gust. It is nothing in a helicopter jumping multiple hundreds of feet. It's totally normal in a helicopter. And so the fact that there is like no altitude separation between where these helicopters are flying out and the descending aircraft on short final is insane to me, that it has become common to clear these helicopters to fly either behind or under these fixed-wing commercial airliners that are on short final into Reagan. It's crazy to me. And other helicopter pilots that are still flying in the area are saying it is common practice to allow them to fly on across an active short final.
Oof. Amber, I know you got to go. Thank you for giving us some wisdom tonight. Appreciate you very much. Amber Smith, her book is Unfit to Fight. It's an excellent book, former helicopter pilot. All right, let's move on, talk about some other things. Let's talk about something wonderful. Let's talk about getting rid of pain real quick. And then we'll get back to politics. Let's get rid of some pain. You have pain in your life? What is the physical pain that makes you dread getting out of bed in the morning when those eyes flutter open? Is it your back? It's a normal one. Maybe it's your knee hurting you. I know what that's like. Shoulder. You know you can take care of that. You can go after it. Not mask it and not ignore it. That's what we love to do, that. We just ignore it. Oh, I'll be fine. It'll be fine. But you're not fine. You're hurt. Let Relief Factor help you. It's a 100% drug-free supplement. Instead of putting all this crap in your body that's horrible for you, try a supplement. It's going to help your body's natural response to inflammation. And you don't have to take anyone's word for it, myself included. Please don't. You can try it for 3 weeks for $19.95. Call 1-800-4-RELIEF or go to relieffactor.com. We'll be back.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Thursday, reminding you to email the show your Ask Dr. Jesse questions for tomorrow, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. And I don't know why you asked me details like that, Chris, about things. Jewish producer Chris was asking me about oatmeal baths for kids, and I don't remember why we gave them to our kids, but I know there were occasions where we did. And then he's always like, well, what are you doing for? How do you do it? Dude, I don't know. I'm married. I was there helping. I don't know. That's Ob's job, is to do, handle most of that. Now, obviously, I'm not saying I'm a barbarian. I was changing diapers and all that stuff, too. But when it comes to oatmeal baths, Ob says that I, quote, handle the kids like a grizzly bear and stuff like that, which is not true. That's one, too. I'm telling you, Chris, if you give that baby an oatmeal bath, add a little brown sugar and cinnamon in there, and it smells fantastic. What? I know she's going to eat the bath water. They eat the bath water anyway. What difference does it make? At least you can make it taste good. And that is in no way a defense of oatmeal, which you somehow took that as a defense of oatmeal. Everyone knows oatmeal is garbage. And even if you can spruce it up, here, you want a solution? If this is the best solution to spruce up oatmeal. Peanut butter. You take, don't turn your nose up. Listen. You take, it's not a cheat. It's, look, you got, it needs all the help it can get. You put a scoop of peanut butter in there, little brown sugar, little cinnamon maybe. If you, look, even if you don't want the brown sugar, little cinnamon peanut butter, it makes it at least edible. I personally don't eat it, and it's not because I can't make it edible. The peanut butter makes it edible. It's because whenever I do, I'm starving in like an hour. I need something more out of my breakfast. The oatmeal, it just doesn't stay with you. I don't know what the deal is. Let's do some emails before we get to Tulsi and everything else. Jesse, we still don't have any answers for the Baltimore Bridge. You think we will know what the truth is concerning this kilo? Okay. People I trust. I am not telling you what happened last night. I am not telling you. I don't know. And as you heard Amber Smith a few minutes ago, we may never know because we're not going to have a little black box out of that helo. If the helo was at fault, and it looks right now like that helo may have been at fault, one, remember, training accidents, deadly training accidents, are the entire history of militaries all over the globe. It's a dangerous profession. Even training involves doing dangerous things, and people make mistakes. And when you make a mistake, if that's what happened, you can die. The people I trust don't think there was anything nefarious that happened last night. I'm not saying that. No one can say that for a fact, and we'll never know that. But don't automatically go there with, you know, terrorist attack and stuff like that, especially when we have an administration like this one that apparently intends for the first time in a long time to be honest.
But I also wanted to give an update on the tragedy that happened last night here in Washington, D.C., and provide a little bit more information as we are actively working to investigate and understand what occurred and why. At about 8:48 last night, a UH-60 assigned to the U.S. Army Aviation Brigade in the Military District of Washington, Fort Belvoir, Virginia, collided tragically with a civilian airliner. The unit involved, the Army unit involved, was Bravo Company 12th Aviation Battalion at Fort Belvoir. It was an annual proficiency training flight. And when we look at the crew, and we're not all kin have been notified, so we're going to withhold ranks and names at this point. We do know on our side who was involved. It was a fairly experienced crew and that was doing a required annual night evaluation. They did have night vision goggles.
They came out right away. He goes on. It's a longer statement. I'm just not going to play it all right now. They came out right away. Here's what happened. Here's who it was. Here's what they were doing. Here's what they were open right away. So just don't let your mind go there if they're being honest with us. And if everybody, people you trust are saying it was an accident, I think it was just an accident. That's all. Jesse, I'm struggling a little with the Catholic NGO issue. It is like the Pope and Bishop are trying to use their people's values against them. They are. The Pope is a communist. That's one. And two, Catholic and Christian NGOs facilitating the invasion of illegals into this country should not be a reason to indict the Catholic Church or the church itself. Remember, anybody can start an NGO. Anyone can. And anyone can name an NGO. If I want to start a Christian NGO for open borders. In fact, maybe I just want to name it that. This is the Christian NGO for open borders. I can do that. Now, if I choose to start some disgusting open borders non-government organization designed to violate the sovereignty of my country and fill up my country with rapists and murderers, just because I slap Christian on there, does that mean Christians are doing it? No, the Catholic Church, the Christian Church, all organized religions have people in them, right? And people can be freaking evil. Religious people can be evil too, most definitely. The Pope, before he became the Pope, was a communist. He's been a communist forever. He's still a communist. And remember, the communist doesn't serve two gods. He has a religion already. The communist god does not share space with any other one. He serves a religion of destruction and domination. Just because he does it with white clothes on doesn't somehow make him magically anything else. All right? Jesse, I understood Glenn Beck to say on the radio today that he was worried because the confirmation vote for Tulsi Gabbard was going to be done in secret. Have you heard about this? I hope many people call their senators about this injustice. Okay, so let's talk about this because this has been going around and it's time to talk about Tulsi Gabbard before we get back to the open border stuff and everything else. Yes, I have heard the rumor that the United States Senate is going to try to hold this vote in secret. One, I don't know whether or not they will pull it off, but two, I do know that's what they want. So let's talk about why they want that next.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.